We are in the middle of Mizmor Hey. We're up to Vani Beroyv Chaschav Vaveisach. Let's go to that passage again. Vani Beroyv Chaschav Vaveisach. Shtachav Vaheichal Kotshecha Birasach. Okay, that's what we're up to. And I, Beroy, with the abundance of your kindness, Avoy, I come to Vaveisach. Shtachav, I bow. I bow. Vaheichal Kotshecha.
I'll take famous Pesukim for 200.
Birasach. Okay, so let's see the Rashi again in this pasuk. Rashi has a unique twist on this pasuk. Pasuk Ches. One more time. Vani avo, avani avo yveisach lohoidais locha biroiv chaska. So he's changing the Michal said yes very correctly. Rashi appears to be changing the order of the pasuk to translate it. That I come, Vani, I avoy vesecha. I come to your bayis. I bow down to your hechal kashcha, to your holy abode, v'yirasecha, in fear. For what purpose? In order to give you, to praise you for your abundance of kindness. Vani avoy vesecha lohoidoy slecha, to thank you. Okay, those words isn't it very interesting that we're saying these words here today on Thanksgiving? The opening pasuk today is lahoydos lecha on Thanksgiving. Okay, I come to Yibayis lahoydos lecha beroyv chaschecha shehif leisa aleinu. You've done wondrous things upon us laharoseinu to show us nekama mehem. The wondrous things that you have done for us, Hashem. The kindness is that you have shown us. We are witness to the destruction of our enemy. As we said yesterday, that's a very big important thing, because when Lot fled from Sodom, he was not permitted to turn around and look back. Why was he not permitted to turn around and look back? Because if you don't deserve the salvation, you're not allowed to look. And the only time you're allowed to look is only if you deserve the salvation. So here, the fact that Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to allow us to witness the nekama of our enemies, it represents the kind that we are deserving, and we thank Hashem for being able to be deserving. And it's like we thank you for thanking you. All right, so let's see over here. Let's go. Let's look at the Targum for 1 second. Va'ano I b'skei tuvach, in the abundance of your goodness, e'ol I enter leveisach. Esgoid, I bow lehichla dikud shach. I bow before your holy abode, hechol bid chal toch, with fear. Now this is very interesting pasuk, because what do we? Let me take out a sitter. Brich shmei.
When you say
brich shmei,
what do you say? You say bow before.
Okay, now look in the Brich Shmei. In the Brich Shmei, what do we say? I'm going to open up the sitter. In the Brich Shmei, when you take out the Sefer Torah, what do we say? Brich Shmei. Okay, when we take out the Sefer Torah, we recite this beautiful passage from the Zohar. Brich Shmei de Morei Olma. May the master, the name of Hashem, the master of the world, may be blessed. Brich Kisroch Va'ashroch. May his Keser be blessed. His place be blessed. Okay, then we go further. And then we go further. We're going down in this passage. One second. Ano avdo de kud shabrichu. I am the servant of Hashem. Of Kosh Baruch Hu. Disogidna kame.
Yeah.
I bow before him. Okay, that's not a chiddush. That's no big chiddush. Umikamo dikar oiraisa. And I bow before the honor of the Torah. Bechol idon v'idon. At every given moment. Really? When do you bow before the Torah? When do you bow? You bow before Hashem. We say Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Elokei Avraham Elokei Avraham Elokei Yitzchak Elokei Yaakov. We bow to Hashem. So I understand. We say that we bow before Hashem. Again, this passage from the Zohar is recited in honor of the Torah. So everything here in this passage refers to the honor of the Torah. And it says here in this passage, we bow before the Torah. So here is the answer. This pasuk is the answer. Va'ani and I, the Targum at least, beroiv in the abundance of your kindness, avol ve'isecha, I come to your home. Eshtachave, I bow el heichal kodshecha, to the heichal. What do you mean the heichal? What is inside the heichal? The Aron, the Torah. The Torah, it's not just bowing to the Shechina. Over here it's bowing to the heichal itself. We allude to this in the Al HaMichya. We ask Hashem the Al Mizbechecha, the Al Hecholecha. What does it say by the Mizbeach and the Hechol? It says by Bikurim, the Hishtachavisa Lefnei Hashem Elokecha. Okay, when you bring Bikurim, you put the Bikurim on the Mizbeach before the Mizbeach, and then you bow. You bow before Lefnei Hashem Elokecha. Where are you bowing? You bow towards the Hechol. You bow towards the west. El heichal kodesh kav yosach. But it doesn't stand mamshik. The sugi mistal for the mizbeach and for the heichal, because the shivas haninim, the seven minim, the shivas haninim are kineged the bikurim, and the bikurim were put before the mizbeach, and the person, the farmer, would bow before the heichal. So here we have here in this pasuk at least a remez to this. Where else do we bow? Take out the Sefer Torah. The Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Right? Then we say Echad Elokeinu Gadol Adonainu Kadoshimo. Then what do? You turn around. You make a 180. A 180. Gadol Hashem Iti. So why Reisman?
They turn back to the Yaron.
To the Yaron. So by Reisman, he has in his book the imponderables. He has a collection of what he calls imponderables, questions, and he has no answer for. And one of his imponderables is it should be just the opposite. When we say. We should say this facing the Aron HaKodesh. And then when we say Gadlu LaHashem Iti, who is the word Iti referring to? The Kahal. So you should turn to the Kahal and you should say to them Gadlu LaHashem Iti. It should mamash be just the opposite. When you sing Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad Echadu Elokeinu Gadol Adonainu Kadosh Shemoi, then you should say it with Yira and you should face the Aron HaKodesh. And when you say Gadlu LaHashem Iti, you're addressing the Tzibur, you're inviting the Tzibur, come, let us Gadlu, let us make great Hashem Iti together with me. And what happens? It's just the opposite. We face the Aron HaKodesh. Why is that us? He doesn't have an answer. I once tried to suggest, Gadlu LaHashem Iti, you're not addressing the Tzibur, you're addressing the Sifrei Torah. You're telling all of the Sifrei Torah in the Aron HaKodesh. You, the Sefer Torah, should be Megadel. You're giving the Sifrei Torah like life. Gadlu LaHashem Iti. I don't know, that's a little bit of a wild idea.
Addressing the ones not taken out.
Right, you're trying the compensation price. You're trying to be Mephias then. Gadlu LaHashem Iti, together with me, we were, whatever it is. But over here in this pasuk is an interesting pasuk where it says here, the Heichal Kodshecha. You are bowing before the Heichal. The Heichal simply means, the Heichal means the entire structure which can mean the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadosh. There are two rooms. There is the larger room, and then there's the small room that's within the larger room. There's the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So you say, Galul Hashem Iti, Unirayim Hashmo Yachtav, you're bowing towards the Heichel. And in the Pnimius, and the Pnimius of the Heichel is the Oroin, is the Torah. The Menorah also, to a degree, represents the Torah. And when you say, Galul Hashem Iti, and it says here that you're bowing before the Torah. Okay, you're not just bowing to Hashem Shekhinah, you're bowing before the Torah. Look at the Targum again. Targum says, "Vanor I bisgay to with the abundance of your goodness, a all I enter leveisach eskoid I bow leheichlo the kudshach. I bow before the heichal." It's again. It seems very innocent, but it's not. You don't bow to the heichal. You bow to Hashem. So you're going to tell me, oh, you're bowing to the Shekhinah that resides in the heichal. The Shekhinah is everywhere. Why to the Shekhinah that resides? But if you want to say when it says the Heichel, you're really alluding to the object in the Heichel. The ultimate object in the Heichel is the Torah. You're bowing before the Torah. And that would fit very well with the Nusach of the Brich Shmei, that I, Ano Avdu the Kutcher Brichu, this Sagidne Kamei, Umi Kamo, Dikar Oiraisa. I bow before the Torah itself. Okay, that's an idea. Now, notice the Targum is not with Rashi. According to the Targum, there's a major, major difference when it says Beroiv Chasticha. The simple translation of the words, I'm sure that's the way it is in art school, and that is the way we probably translate these words in our mind if we do that, go to the effort of translating, is that it's very similar to Moedim Derabanan. Moedim Derabanan is, we thank you for giving us the opportunity to thank you. Bowing before Hashem is an expression of thank you, and it's an expression of humility, submission. It's an expression of serving Hashem. It's an expression of service. So when you say Va'ani, so who should thank who? Hashem, you should thank me. I'm coming here, I'm serving you. So Hashem, you should thank me, you should reward me for my submission to you. No, that's an attitude of apikorsis. The fact that you have an opportunity to be submissive to Hashem, for that you also have to thank Hashem. It's not like in the world, if you work for someone, you do someone a favor, you work for free, you're a volunteer, you do a favor, they owe you a thank you. That's the way the world works. But when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's not the case. The very fact that you have an opportunity to thank Hashem, that itself demands you have to thank Hashem for that opportunity. It's exactly what it says over here. Here I'm coming to bow before you. Eshtachaveh. I'm bowing. And we're saying, Hashem, it is only with an abundance of kindness, beroiv chasdecha, with incredible kindness, that we have an opportunity to bow before you. Today's Thanksgiving. Okay? America. America, there cannot be more in the history of the world, there could probably not be more of an example of this idea than Thanksgiving. America, after everything is said and done, all of the corruption that's out there, that we know about in this generation, what's going on now, but it has been a land of freedom of religion, halavai vayter, for all of these years, where we have an opportunity to bow before Hashem. And that we know from history, we can't take for granted. Because throughout most of our history, we did not have that opportunity. A Jew was not allowed, certainly not in a foreign land, and even in Eretz Yisrael, was not allowed to serve, to bow before Hashem.
You read the article, by the way, I assume, on Shemus Israel, your cousin showed how they've been celebrating Thanksgiving.
No.
It'll be in the passage.
So tell me, what do you say?
They have a very long history of observing Thanksgiving since the late 1700s.
They have a special, they pick up
Sefer. Yeah, they have a whole thing. Well, it'll be in the, first of all, it's
fascinating. Mayor once took me. We went on Veterans Day, remember?
It'll be in the package that goes out tonight.
Okay, Mayor took me on the veteran. We went to a cemetery in the Lower East Side where they have some Jews who fought in the Civil War.
Well, they have their own in Chatham Square.
Right, that's where we went. That's where we went. So they had a ceremony where the rabbi of the Spanish Portuguese synagogue, I haven't seen my cousin, he officiates, and they have a ceremony, and he gave a little hesped, a little, there were about 10 people there, he mentioned. They identified their graves, and you know who they were, and they gave a little hesped about each one of them, and they put down a flag, put down an American flag, and maybe he said, I don't remember, when Kaddish the mayor took me, we went one day to the ceremony.
Memorial Day. Right?
It was Memorial Day?
Yeah.
Okay, so it was, you know,
honor God, etc.
There's an Arna God.
The original shul is down.
Was on that block. Well, the Spanish Portuguese synagogue was on that block? Was over there?
No, it wasn't there. It was, I think, the Chase Manhattan.
Where the Spanish Portuguese synagogue was there in the Lower East Side?
Yeah.
This is on the Lower East Side. This cemetery is in the Lower East Side. Okay, Jews who fought in the Civil War. And
because they're on Fifth Avenue and the parade march is right in front of the shul.
Not the Civil War, the Revolutionary War.
Now the Thanksgiving parade, which is a business, right in front of the shul.
They're having a Thanksgiving parade,
they
Macy's?
They give packages, they give out to the poor people, you know.
Are they having a parade today?
Huh?
There's a parade today?
Yeah.
Last year, there was a parade?
Virtual. Last year, no.
No, there was no parade last year? COVID? This year, there's a parade? Okay.
That explains the well
attended time. Everyone went to the parade. Want to see the balloons. Yeah?
When you talk about Beit Hashem, Beit Hashem has a Kedusha. The fact is that we daven toward Beit Hashem. Toward Mekom Beit
Hashem.
Yaakov said, this is a Mekom Kadosh, so we bow to that place. The Lahabdil Elephant Fair of the Lord. What do the Muslims do? They daven toward Mecca. What is their in Mecca? Muhammad is not there. But the Hamakom is there.
So that's a controversial topic. You say something very, very good, but this is a very controversial topic. Is there, when you bow, when you come to the Makom, Achein Yesh Hashem b'Makom Hazeh? It's true that it's the bay. So what are you bowing to? You're bowing to the Shekhinah, the divine presence.
Right.
You're not necessarily bowing to the bricks and stones. You're bowing to the divine presence that rest upon these bricks and stones. That like Bizmana said, why don't we walk in the area of the Azara on the Harabayas? Because the Shekhinah, well, the question the Shekhinah would depart. It's the place where Hashem, it's not because the bricks and stones have any sanctity, Hashem's divine presence is resting upon this Mokai. Okay, so it's really the Hashem's divine presence. You're not bowing per se to the bricks and stones. It's the Shekhinah. So the question is, but the thing that we hear is that in this part, going back to the Brich Shmei, it makes it very clear, this is something that is discussed, and the Rizman talks about this, others talk about this, we're bowing before you, Hashem, and we separate it. You can't say that you're bowing to the Torah, you're bowing to the Shekhinah that resides in the Torah. If that would be correct, then there's no need to repeat. Is ano avdo dekut shabdichu, I am the servant of Hashem, desogidna kameh, I bow before Hashem. And then there's another expression, umikamo dikar araisa. I bow before the honor of the Torah. So what do you mean? Isn't the honor of the Torah included in this gidna kameh? There's only one Hashem. Yisrael v'araisa v'kud shabrichu chatu. Yisrael, the Torah, and Klal Yisrael are one. So when we say that we bow before Hashem, that means that when you bow before Hashem. You bow before the Sefer Torah? What is it necessary to separate Hashem from the Sefer Torah? Obviously, there's something more. It's you bow before Hashem. The Sefer Torah itself does indeed have sanctity. Obviously, the sanctity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, question is, do you want to extend that concept to a building? A Sefer Torah, we understand. I don't know if we really understand it either. A Sefer Torah is ink, dioi, parchment. It was written with Kavana and Lashem, Kedusha, Sashem, and the Sefer put down the words in a very precise way it has to be written, and it gives the Sefer Torah sanctity. You build a shul, no one before they build a shul says the words, I'm building the shul, Lashem, Kedusha, Space, Sakneses. There's no such thing. You build a shul, you build a shul. You go to shul. Is there a way how you build a shul? No, there are very few halachas. What?
We don't do it because most of our shuls
has precision. But when they built the Beis HaMikdash, did they say when they laid every brick, L'shem Kedushas Beis HaMikdash?
Why not?
You didn't hear such a thing. When they laid the walls of the island, they built the Mizbeach. Okay, so you want very nice. It's a very nice thing to have Jewish workers do all the construction and do all the things. But when they actually built the Beis HaMikdash, they laid the stones, they built the Mizbeach, did they actually, when they put a nail into the wall, did they actually say, L'shem Kedushas Beis HaMikdash? You never heard of this. What? That's Agoda. That's Divrei Agoda. David invested, the Kedusha of David would have went and built the base of Nish. The Kavanah would have been so powerful it would not have been able to be destroyed. Okay, maybe. Obviously, we do treat holy places with the greatest degree of sanctity, but the question is the sanctity so great that it deserves we should bow? Bowing is a quantum leap. To say that so much sanctity, you're going to bow before the Beis HaMikdash. You bow before Hashem. When you come to shul, no one's bowing before a shul. You bow before Hashem. This is Hashem's makom. Hashem's divine presence rests in the Beis HaKnesses. You bow before Hashem. This is a shocking chiddush. This is not my observation, that in Brich Shemei it should say that we bow before a Sefer Torah? What? Where do you get that from? Where do you find a Makara source for that in the Talmud Bavli, Talmud Yerushalmi, in the Medrash?
That you should. If you say the Tokom?
So it's a person. No, that's covered. You stand. Doesn't it? You bow. You stand. When they say the Tokom, you shall. So when he enters into the room,
but
you stand.
What is the Agadah?
To give him honor. To feed him. Rashi says. No, it doesn't say bow. Rashi says you feed him and you dress him. And when you walk, he goes first. Who are you bowing to? To Hashem.
Right.
You're not bowing to a human being. You only bow to Hashem.
You bow to the front of the shul or to the back of the shul?
You bow ordinarily to the Sefer Torah is. The Sefer Torah should be, it's not so clear, you're supposed to go to Mizrach. You're supposed to really bow toward, you're supposed to face, I don't know about bowing. You're supposed to be facing the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash is the place of the ultimate Shekhinah, which more or less is east. Okay, let's go further. But I just want to bring out this point. Over here we have a very powerful passage that talks about bowing. And bowing, there's two different things that we've been discussing. There is bowing before Hashem. We do learn a principle of bowing before the Sefer Torah. Here it says bowing before the Heichal. What does it mean you're bowing before the Heichal? Is it because you're bowing before the Shekhinah that is resting in the Heichal? Or are you bowing before the Aron HaKodesh, the Sefer Torah that's there, which also deserves a degree of sanctity where we should bow, as it says explicitly in the Brich Shmei. Okay, the second topic that we discuss over here is what exactly does it mean, Beroiv Chastecha? So it was a fundamental machloikis Rashi and Unkelis as to the meaning. According to Rashi, it means you have to reorder the pasuk. Vani I, Avov Esecha, I come into your home, I come into you and I bow before the Heichal Kodeshecha in fear of you. For what? For what purpose? In order to express to you a thank you for obliterating my enemies. In order to thank you for witnessing the fall of my enemies. So Beroiv Chastecha is limiting the Hoidah. I mean, Rashi is limiting the, I'm not thanking you for everything, Hashem. I'm not thanking you for America. I'm not thanking you for food, for clothing, for shelter. You're abundant. No, but that's what Rashi says. But Rashi's not saying that. Rashi's saying the Roiv Chastecha means the abundance of blessing in specifically in witnessing my enemies be defeated. That's what Rashi says. Rashi is coming to limit the scope of Roiv Chastecha. The kindness is a very specific kindness. I have witnessed the defeat of my enemies. And for that I come to the Beis HaMikdash, I bow down in fear of you, and I thank you for eliminating my enemies. That's not what the Targum says. The Targum says, the Roif Chastecha, I thank you, but no, even Uncle List is also limited. You're not thanking Hashem for everything. I'm thanking you specifically for freedom of religion. That's what I'm thanking you for. I'm thanking you for the opportunity to serve you. No one is trying to prevent me from serving you. And this we know good and well, you can't take this for granted, because throughout our history, we've been very, very, did not have, more often than not, we did not have an opportunity to serve Hashem with freedom of religion. I am thanking you for the roiv chasdecha is for the ability that we have to serve you for freedom of religion. Sorry? Look at the unkelus. Va'ani and I, not in Targum, va'ana biskei tuvach, with the abundance of your, only because of the abundance of your goodness, e'ol, do I merit to enter l'vei soch, into your home. It's only because you've been gracious to me, you've been so good, the abundance allowed me to come here to you, to this makom, and to serve you. I'm thanking you for the opportunity to thank you. You know, you have a mash, again, the way of the world is not like I told you. You know, you go to a regular shul, most shuls, they pay people to lane. Who wants to lane? No one wants to lane. Okay, we need to give incentives. We'll pay $50 a parsha. Not enough anymore. You go ask these guys, these kids today, oh, no, not enough. $100, $200. In the Hamptons, I remember hearing many years ago, $300. Come to Shabbos, I had an opportunity to go to the Hamptons for Shabbos. They would pay $300, put you up, you have a good meal, a good place to stay, you can mingle with the rich and famous, lifestyles of the rich and famous, and you get paid $300 to lay in Kriyasa. Probably by now, for sure, it's a lot more. I'm sure by now it's more. So then you have a shul where, so, you know, you want me to do a service? Pay me money. And then you have shuls where literally you have an auction. And you, who, no, not just the Aliyah, not, who wants the zuchus to lay? You get that prepared, 10 hours. And we're not letting anyone, it's a select group who we know can perform well. You know, you've been tested, you've been vetted. You are capable of doing it in a way that is good, pleasurable for the people in the shul. You have, let's say, a pool of 10 people. They all want a lane. Who gets the lane? You know what?
Never heard of such a shul.
Never heard of such a shul?
No.
Either have I. If I know, I shouldn't say that. I know of a whole shul. You should know it's not true. I know even more. Okay, I'm not going to elaborate. I know of a shul where this is, not only is it true, the whole existence of the shul is because of something like this. So it's there. You know, people want that opportunity. Now you'll say, do they want a l'shem shemaim? Now l'shem shemaim, that's another story. But no, it's an attitude. What is the attitude you have to serve Hashem? Is it I'm doing you the favor, or Hashem, are you doing me the favor? When you live with an attitude that every single mitzvah is an opportunity, you'll even pay for those opportunities to show how valuable it is. And when you have an opportunity, what do you say? Va'ani b'roiv chasdecha avo v'secha. Hashem, I want to come to your shul, and there are many obstacles in the way, and there's many problems, and it's only because of your abundant kindness do I have the merit to be able to come and serve you. That's a world of a difference to a person that says, I'm not interested in coming altogether, leave me alone. You want me to come to your synagogue? Pay me, make it worth my while to come. That's a horrible attitude. That attitude, Klal Yisrael, will come to an end in 1 minute. The whole attitude has to be that serving Hashem is an opportunity, and to acknowledge that is a chesed elyon for us to have that opportunity. Today is Thanksgiving, and you cannot deny the fact that America, after everything said and done, has done for Klal Yisrael, given them an enormous opportunity like never before. Opportunity of freedom of religion. You can come and learn freely. You can daven. No one's stopping you. No one's stopping you on the street. No one's harassing you. You can come serve Hashem, b'cholev, and the government will even pay for it half the time. They'll even, if you really want to do it, you'll find a way for the government to subsidize all the yeshivas, all the shuls. They give money for everything. They give money for security for the shuls. They give money for food. They have downstairs to see. What?
When the government gives food, they give Chol Yisrael.
They give Chol Yisrael. It's unprecedented in world history. It's unprecedented. And it's mamish hashkacha practice to read this pasuk today on Thanksgiving. It's everything's b'hashkacha. Va'ani b'roiv chastecha avo v'esecha eshtach v'lehechal kodshecha b'yirasecha. Hashem has, America has been Hashem's shaliach, has been Hashem's agent in so many different ways for us to have the opportunity to come to the Heichal Kodshecha, not only here in America, but throughout the entire world. The influence of America is enormous. Eretz Yisrael, no Israeli could lift up their head if not for the fact that America is backing the state of Israel. This is a fact. Okay, they have their backing to obviously every there are a lot of issues, and obviously the world changes a lot, but to a very large degree. And it's an incredible chesed that Hashem has done, and Hashem has chosen certain nations and people throughout history to give us that opportunity to have the freedom and the opportunity to serve Hashem without any struggle. Okay, let's go to the next pasuk. Pasuk tes Hashem necheni vitzid kosecha leman shoriroi. It's a very beautiful word. The word shoriroi means, it can mean many, many things. Rashi here says, oinai. The word shorirai, he learns, means those people who want to see my destruction. Hametzapim, who yearn, she'evgoid b'cha, and v'sa'azveni. People who are my enemies. He translates the word shorirai almost like the word asonai, like an enemy. It's a totally different word. Let's see, he goes further. Shorirai, kumo ashurenu v'loi koroiv. Now, I take it back. The word shorirai, other mafarshim, really means to see. It's to look.
Yeah, well, that's what this reference is.
To gaze. And in this context, Rashi is just, we always say in Hebrew, words are not defined. A word is defined by its context. People are looking, waiting, yearning, anticipating our fall, our defeat. So the word shorirai literally means those who look at us. But they're looking at us. There is for good. Yosef HaTzadik, the Benois Tzo'ado, Alei Shur. So there Shur really means a wall.
Meaning.
Many meanings. It means a wall. But Alei Shur means he is above the Ar. Chazal Darshan that the Ayin Hora is not Shoylet on Yosef HaTzadik, and the source is Alei Shur. He is above a gaze. He is above it. A person can look at Yosef with an evil eye, and it's bulletproof. He's alei. He is above it. Above and beyond, he is sheltered from a shur,
right.
From an evil gaze. Yeah?
We also have the same expression in the David Hashem Ari. Says, Horeni Hashem Darkeko Haini Ba'orach Mishor Laman Shoravoy.
Those who look at me with an evil eye, protect me from the gaze of those people who look upon me with evil. A comment?
I say something that I heard from my father-in-law, Zichron Baruch. He said, "Habet eini b'shurai, b'kamim alai mireim tishmana oznai." What does it mean? "Habet eini b'shurai." David HaMelech says, I am looking at those who look at me, so I can and I hear what they say about me. So then I can correct my ways. Maybe I don't behave well. So ani mistakel ech shemistaklim alai. Batabet eini b'shurai, bakamim alai mireim tishman ozai. I want to hear what they say about me.
Very good.
They look at me. So
very good, very good. You look, you pay attention. The Yisim Nikim Hashem Yisrael. You have to look at people. So here the word Shorai means those who look. Look over here at the Mitzvahs David. The Mitzvahs David says Shorai Inyan Habotah, to gaze. Kimo lo sishureini oy, may an eye not look upon, an evil eye look upon me. What does it say over here in the Malbum, in the Perush Hamilos, on page 41, Shorai. Batamid al hamabit merachoik. He has a little more flavor. The Malbim. It means someone who looks at from a distance. There are those who look close by, and there are those that look at you from a distance. So he learns Sharoi al Habit Mirchaik al Darche Chaveroi, Ubisamer Osoi, and they yearn, they anticipate the person's. And here for some reason, he's telling us that it's evil. Now, in this context, it's an evil look. It's an evil look, but it doesn't have to be that. For some reason over here, maybe it does. Maybe that's what he's trying to teach over here. He's saying it means someone who looks from a distance, and it means al darche umitzaper ro'asa. You're looking at him in a sinister way. And there's a better English word for this. When you look at a person yearning for his evil, we have a good English word for this?
For what?
Exactly, there's got to be one word for this. You look at a person with an evil eye. You look at him, you don't fargin him. You see what he's doing, and I can't wait. I can't wait until he stumbles and falls. It's like in politics, right? You can't wait until, you know, everyone is looking at the other one. Can't wait until they mess up. They make a mistake. The whole day they go and they search. And can't wait for that mistake to happen so they can pounce upon them.
Yeah, they call it a gotcha moment.
So what is the English word when you look at a person in such a...
All I can tell you is what's translated here. Those who lie in wait for me.
Okay, they lie in wait. That's definitely true, but it's lacking the expression of seeing. The word definitely relates to looking. You're looking. It's not obviously only a physical.
It's almost like stalking.
It's a conceptual.
Like stalking.
You're waiting. You're lying in wait. You're stalking. You're lying in wait, but it also involves the word to gaze.
The ambush would be a good word.
The way to lying in ambush? There's a look. You know, when you walk into a room and there are people who don't like you and they look at you.
Right.
They give you a look.
I'm used to
that. What is that? What is that look? There's a certain word in English. When you walk into them, they don't like it. They're looking at you, and there's a volume of commentary.
Sneer.
Okay, maybe sneer. Look at the Malbim. The Malbim one more time. Ba, it's on page 41 on the left side in the Tefilos David LaMalbim. Okay, each one of Malbim's commentaries has a different name. And he is always, of course, divided into the Beor, the explanation, and the Perish Hamilos. We have on this page here really three translations on the page. Ungelis, Targum is a translator, more or less, it's a translator. The Mitsudois David, I mean, really, the Mitsudois Tzion, okay, the Mitsudois, which is two parts, and the Mitsudois Tzion. And the Malbum, the Be'ur Hamilos. And he says, Sharoi is a very good word. One thing about Tehillim is we get to learn some vocabulary. Because the vocabulary of Tehillim is much, much more than the Tehillim, than the vocabulary of the other Nevi'im. And the other Nevi'im, it's more to decipher. It's not so much the vocabulary is difficult. The vocabulary is not that all that difficult. But the combination of words in Nevi'im is sometimes very complicated. Here, it's not just the interpretation, but there are a lot of new vocabulary words in Sefer Tehillim, and that is a very good blessing for us to learn some new things. And one very good word is this word Shoriroi. What does this word mean? So let's look at the three translators. On page 41 we have the Malbum, Shoriroi Bo Tamid Al Hamabit Merechoik. His Yisoid is when you look from a distance, Al Darkei Chaveroi, the ways, the conduct of your friend, Umitzapeh, and you're yearning with your look, ro'asoy, that he should suffer. Uche ubichim litzah zo lekaman. There's another thing later on. Hareni Hashem darkecha, show me your ways. Unicheni bo'irach mishar, guard me down a path of righteousness. That's straight. Leman, to protect me, shoriroi. And by doing so, you will protect me from those who look upon me and can't wait for me to stumble. Let's now again look at the Mitzudas Tzion one more time. The word Shoriroi, Inyan Habata, he does not at all mention this elaboration that it refers to an evil gaze. He just doesn't mean and does not mention this concept that the difference between near and far. Now again look at the Targum. Targum Pasuk Tes, Hashem Devar Yasi Bitzid kisach, guide me. Guide me in your righteousness. Min biglal. Here his words are tush bechai. Takein kodomai or chasach. Tush bechai. I don't know what that word means. Tush bechai. Okay, so I don't know what that word means because of the tush bechai. We have to find out. I have to bring in the sefer of the translation. A very good dictionary. Fantastic dictionary on Targum. It's specifically geared towards you know, Nei Mamash Targum, tush bechai. I don't know what that word means. Because of those that, the word shevach means to praise. So you want to say those that are, we are inverting the word of praise to disgrace me. Is that what it means? Those who disgrace me? Okay, this remains to be seen, what this word, how he's coming to translate the word over here. Let's now take a look over here at the Rashi one more time. Rashi is not always a translator. We can't always say that Rashi is translator. Rashi, you know, it's somewhere in the middle. And many times Rashi does translate. And here he does. Here Rashi over here is, he's saying, O Yinai. What does that mean, O Yinai? If I'm not mistaken, it means oppressors. Oni. Right? You say, Re'eino ve'onyenu. Hashem, please look upon our suffering.
Well, that's not how he translates.
Okay, what did he say?
Those who look after me. Not in a good way.
Oyinai. Those who look, just who look after me. That's what he translates the word in the Judaic press. Oirashi, oyinai. I don't know, something doesn't sit well.
I understand the Targum by what he says.
Yeah.
He doesn't say my enemies. The
yeah.
Those people who follow me, the man Tush Bechai, Erech Mishabachim Oti, I have some friends, some, not too many, but I have friends. But and they look at me, and they will follow me. So when the man...
He's saying in the entire interpretation, he's saying it's good.
The man Tush Bechai, Erech Mishabachim Oti. As a Sunday, if I stumble, he says, that's our leader? So the Hefech, I share the Fanai Dake, the man
my fans.
I share.
For my fans, do it for my fans. I have, we have fans. We have, like you know, we appreciate this, and that Hashem allow me to be successful, not in my zuchus, in the zuchus.
Always he talks about his enemies. I mean, once in a while he
sure,
talks
so,
about
so you're suggesting the word tush bechad, those who praise me, in their merits, of a person that's like you have parents. Who is your biggest fan? Your parents are your biggest fans. Okay, parents, a parent is always a fan of a child. They're always their biggest fan. I know someone that's very, very, very into, I don't know what they say. They always tell me about it. They're totally into, I'm not sure what it's called. Is it maybe the American Idol? Is that what it's called? The Israeli version of the American, I have no idea what this is. I'm just telling you what this person always talks about. Where people, they perform music and they're judges. And they're
competition.
They're selected by the judges. I know someone that's very into the Israeli version of the American Idol, where people come and they perform. They come and they perform. It's on everyone. The whole world is watching this, and they sing. They mainly singing. And there is a panel of judges who are themselves are experts. And there's a lot of competition. And part what makes this thing incredibly successful, the way it was explained to me, is the people who perform, they're young people, especially in Eretz Yisrael, they're young people, teenagers, and they come with their family, their parents, their father, their mother, and in fact, they put their parents in a different, in a private room. They don't even put them with a regular audience in many cases. And with the family, that's the fans of these people, they have a representative also of the show. And the audience, at least when it's televised, they focus, spend an enormous time focusing on the family who is rooting for the performer. So you have a whole audience, which also includes many, many fans, and then they have in special rooms the family. And this person explained to me what makes this show so amazing is the family, the families. When the people perform, it's the family, the parents, the mother, the father, the grandmother, the siblings. The intensity of yearning, rooting for their child. And even they have different expressions, especially you know, the Israelis in Hebrew, you know, Achenu b'nei Yisrael, some of them even from, some of them are from. And this is what creates the success of this. I don't know what goes on in America and in Britain. They have the UK version, they have an American version. I think every country has their own version. But this person who tells me about this, they're utterly obsessed with this. And it's the emotional connection that how it comes out when you see how much parents love their children and how the intensity of rooting for a child. So Rabbi Kalman is saying a powerful idea that the Targum seems to be saying the word shoroi means tush v'chai. The people biglau. So it's like on this type of show you have over here someone that's performing. Let's say he messes up. The performer makes a mistake. Don't go and eliminate him from the competition. In the Leman Shoroi, the people that are rooting for him, the people that are rooting, you know how much tzar, look how devoted they are, look how much emotion. You gotta do it for them. I'll tell you a personal story. Okay, my mother always tells me this story. My grandmother, she came to America, she was a very, very smart woman, but she had this thing against English. She refused to learn English. It was a mental block. A mental block, just would not be willing to learn the English language. But she had to become an American citizen. She had to become an American citizen. So in order to become an American citizen in those days, I don't know what goes on today, you have to take a bechina. You have to go down to the court, and there's a judge, the shofet, and the judge, you know, you have to do all of these things. Follow all the rules, and the last thing is, you come down, the judge, he asks you all these questions. Who was the first president of the United States? Okay, and who's the president of the United States today? And who's on the dollar bill? You know, he goes the whole charade. And my grandmother refused to learn English, to learn to answer these questions. So the most she can do was she memorized the answers. Okay, so she memorized the answers to those different. But yeah, I hope that the judge would ask the questions in the right order. So lo and behold, vayihi hayoyim, it was the day of her bechina to finish off her citizenship. My grandfather was a Rosh Hashiv in RJJ. So my grandfather didn't go with her because he sent one of his students. He sent one of his students to take her, to accompany her and to help her. Someone that was fluent, you know, in English and knew the ins and outs of the system, to even maybe the person who actually trained her. So she went with her for the bechina. When they come for the bechina, and the judge asks her she memorized all the answers. She had no idea what the questions were, but she memorized the answers. Who was the first president of the United States? Abraham Lincoln. Instead, who freed the slaves? George Washington. Okay, like this. The whole thing went like this. So the judge says, you know, I'm not giving you, you're not ready yet. You have to go back. So the student who accompanied her said, Your Honor, do you know who this woman is? She is the wife of a very big rabbi. Do you know now, back at home, there is in motion a preparation for a grand celebration. Hundreds of students, that's all we made up of, hundreds of students are now preparing to celebrate the citizenship of the wife of our rabbi. We're having a celebration tonight. All the food has been purchased, all the invitations have been sent out. We're celebrating the citizenship of this woman as a citizen of the United States of America, the wife of the rabbi of our community. Your Honor, if you're not going to give her citizenship, so many people are going to be so disappointed. So you know what the judge did? He gave her a citizenship. He said, that's the case. Okay, fine. I changed my mind. I stamped that you're a citizen.
I have a feeling why everybody feels the other way. That Shoroi are my enemy. because it rhymes with
Sorain, it's Sadi.
Sorain
and Sona, and Siv also.
You can say Leman Shorai, Leman Sorai.
Ah, Sora, with a Resh. Okay.
My enemies. So that's why.
That's why it appears that he reversed it. Those tush dechai appears to be those that praise me.
My friends.
Very interesting. So David over here is saying Hashem. Yeah, yeah.
You can read it either way, but maybe he meant it either way.
Right. That's what's very interesting. That's why it's so interesting what the Malbum says. The Malbum says it means l'ro'a. That's very because Lachorah doesn't, you don't get that impression. That it means it depends on the context.
Right. Lemanam or Lemanam. They will bury, they will be happy.
Exactly. Okay, so we have over here two different mahalchim. Hashem, guide me. Bitzit kosech, leman shori roi. Haishar lefonai darkecha. For the sake of the Shoroi, Hayashar means make it straight. Lefonai, before me, Darkecho, your way. In other words, make it easy for me. Show me the signs, that give me directions, ways. Tell me when to turn left, when to, tell me, just make it a straight road, easy. Why? Leman Shoroi. Either it means in order to show up my enemies, the people that are yearning I should stumble, show them up. You see, I didn't stumble, I'm successful. Or, just the opposite. If Hashem, you're not going to do it for me, do it for my fans. Don't let them down. I have a fan club. They're rooting for me. If I'm going to fail, you go to the World Series. Yeah, you go to the World Series in your what's it called? You have the advantage. What's the name? Home team.
Home field
advantage. Could you imagine the World Series? You have 20,000 people rooting for you and you lose the World Series? Don't do it for the team. Do it for the fans. You got to do it for the fans. Oh, during COVID, it was very bizarre. They had games. No fans.
Right.
No one's allowed to come. Just the players. What kind of game is that? What kind of game? The whole game is
very weird for them.
The whole game is the fans. It's not just, you know, to play the game, you can play the game on the computer. The game is for the fans. Leman Shoroi, do it for my fans. Now, here's something very interesting. Let's go now. It's definitely much more satisfying when you look at it at face value than you're asking Hashem, please help me for the sake of my fans. Because, you know, Zuchusim, do it for them. The other interpretation is, at face value seems very bizarre. Do it for me, Hashem, to show up my enemies. I have enemies. They can't wait until I fall. So Hashem, show them up. Show them up. Now, let me ask, is that really appropriate? Is that really a Jewish way? You go, the reason why most of the Farshim say that. That's what the vast majority...
When we look bad, you look bad.
There is a hesper on this too. Show them.
Yeah.
Show them the bad guys.
Yeah.
And they will tell him, oh, he's not too bad. We'll follow him too.
It doesn't seem like good. That. No. It seems like they want these people are going to be eliminated entirely. I hear what you say. They're going to turn around. I know, but David, but that's only by the Jews. Only by amongst us.
Yeah.
But even amongst us, there's a certain point of where it's irreparable. There is a certain, you see many of David's enemies, they never came around. They never, Doeg never came around. Achitofel never came around. They didn't come around at the end. You know, there were so many Shimon, Gera, they didn't come around at the end.
But
yeah.
They did not succeed in their plans.
They did not succeed.
And they get theirs.
And they are punished. So you see, look, the Yavanim, you don't find that the Misyavnim in Hanukkah came around. They didn't come around. It's gone. They're gone. This is, in America, we live in America with this belief that no Jew should be left behind. Right? No Jew. You have Jews all across America that are not religious. They're all Einik Lach of the Vilna Goyim and Rashi and the Rishonim. and you know, you have to go out there and find them and pull them out. You know, not everyone agrees to that principle. It's a very controversial principle. Today in America, we somehow subscribe to it. And you know, the Baal Tshuva movement today in America is very weak. Everyone, it has significantly been diminished. The years ago, in the 70s, the 80s, the Baal Tshuva movement was thriving. And now, they write this in the newspaper, I'm not making this up, they write this, is that the whole Baal Tshuva movement today has taken a whole different approach. You're not able just to go into the street and pick up people by the dozens. It doesn't go like that anymore. In the 70s, it did. In the 70s, you read about, you know, Chabad, of Shlomo Kalbach. It was a different world.
That brother was very involved. He said the same thing that you said, much less now.
There's very little now. It's an entirely different approach today. And if you don't, and we don't appreciate this, because if you go back, like, you really get this appreciation when you go back to the time of when Chabad, when the Rebbe, when he first became Rebbe, back in the 50s, you can literally, when you read these books, you can literally go out into the street and come home with 20 people, bring them home to your Shabbos table. You pick them up like nothing. You walk into the street, you're Jewish, come with me. You'll come, you'll have by your Shabbos table in a second 20 people who want to hear, who are interested. They really want to hear about it. They really want to hear about Yagos. Today, you can't get anyone to come into your house for a Shabbos meal. And if you could get someone, they're not interested. They're not interested. Zero, zilch. It's very impossible. They just had this person, they wrote a book, Arshko published a book, I don't know the name, a very well-known person. He would bring to, I just read the first like chapter or two, and it said exactly this, you say. His name was Rabbi, something with an S.
What?
Something with an S. Schuster?
Schuster.
What's his name?
Schuster.
What?
Schuster from the Koisel?
Yes, from the Koisel. What was his name?
Rabbi.
What was
Mayor
his name?
Schuster.
Mayor Schuster. Schuster. Yeah. Schuster. So what did Mayor Schuster do? He went to the Koilo, and he tapped people on the shoulder. I had a very short conversation, and told him at the end, why don't you come with me? Let's go to a wise man. Let's go to a rabbi. And every single day, he would just bring busloads of people to our Sameach, a whole list of yeshivas. He literally supplied all of the Baal Teshuva yeshivas with students. Every day. Where did our Sameach get students from? Where did these Baal Teshuva yeshivas get people from? He brought them. He did, single-handedly, he's the one that supplied all of these yeshivas. And it was obviously Siyat v'Shemaya, obviously he had some koyach, but you just go to the koyso, you tap someone on the shoulder, you talk to them for 30 seconds, they're willing to come with you to a yeshiva, and before you turn around, they become a Rosh Hashiva, and all their children. Today you don't have that anymore. It's over. Today it's over. The Baal Teshuva Yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael, it's not the same. Not the same. Chabad, the Rebbe, was able to build his Hasidus, according to Dalsin, Shlomo Kalbach did exactly what Schuster did. What Meir Schuster did in Eretz Yisrael, on a smaller scale, Shlomo Kalbach did for the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He would just go, and he would bring intellectuals. He would go to the college campuses, and he would sing, get to know some people, and he would take them, let's now go to a wise man. And he would take them to the Rebbe, and he was mechazik, the Rebbe, like none other. He built up the Rebbe. According to Dalfin, Shlomo Kalbach is one of the people that gets credit for putting Lubavitch on the map. Lubavitch, when Lubavitch started, when they came to America, there was nothing. All the Lubavitcher Hasidim, by and large, were no longer Shomer Shabbos, and they had no interest in rebuilding Lubavitch. And then when the Riyat started, and there was a vacancy, there was a whole year, nothing happened, Shlomo Kalbach was very close to the Rebbe, and he brought in people, intellectuals, that were not religious. And the Rebbe saw in these people incredible potential. And it was Mechazek him, and it's not for nothing that Chabad went into this mode of, you know, missionary work, so to speak, to that became part of their model. It always was, I mean, to a degree, that was always part of their charter, it seems, going back, but it was never really developed anywhere near the way it was in this generation. What?
Until 64, there were only four shlichim in the
Rebbe. Right, it became and who opened up his mind?
The Gdayim were searching, you had the hippie movement. You know, if Lubavitch went over to someone, people were not psyched out. I mean, the reason Square succeeded so easily at that time is because if you had a plumber that had long pants and a beard, you thought he was a hippie. You didn't realize that this
but
was
he's a Chabad. It's more than that. It's not just that. It was a different time. Post-Holocaust.
I'm not interested.
It was a different time. It was a different... We can't relate to that time. It was post-Holocaust. They didn't have all the distractions today of social media. The world didn't go crazy yet. People were looking for something of meaning. It was a different time. That time is over. This doesn't exist. And today it's in a completely different approach. By Chabad, it's different. It's different by the Baal Teshuva movement, the Eretz Yisrael. It's a different world today. That era is over.
Shabbat across America, it's
not the same. Buchholz, right? A fine Buchholz. It's
a match.
It's a little bit of math. Halavai. But when you read Shuster, the first two chapters of Shuster's book, it basically says the way I just told you, it's over. In Eretz Yisrael. It's over in Eretz Yisrael. What are you going to say about America?
I mean, I have a friend who runs a place called Descent and Spot. And the Israelis are swarming there. The army sends whole groups of people there all the time.
Okay, I'm not Hashem saying that.
I mean,
it was a different time. It was a different time. So here's the. So here we're talking about over here this idea of there are people that are not religious. You can bring them back in, but then you're dealing with a time like look at David's life. The people that were against him never came around.
Here.
They never came around. In the time of Hanukkah, you don't find that the Misyavnim ever came around. There was a war against, it was a civil war. The story of Hanukkah is a civil war. It's not a war of Jew against non-Jew, it's a war Jew against Jew. A Jew that is a believer in the Messiah versus a Jew that is a non-believer, a Jew that gave everything up. And it was a civil war, and at the end of the day, who won? The Jews that preserved the tradition. What happened to the Jews that did not preserve the tradition? Gone. They didn't win that Chozer B'Shuva. Gone. They disappeared. So here's the question. What is this little here? Lamana Shor, do it in order to show up my enemies. So the only thing you got to say is, and this comes out, this is something which is very, very true. This world is not a perfect world. And part of the energy that allows a person to succeed, maybe even shaloi lishma, is this mita, is the competition. It's the you have a baseball game. Oh, let's be very nice, you know, we'll play professional baseball, and oh, you know, I see you losing, so you know what, I'll throw you an easy pitch so you can hit a home run, so you could win, and you can also win. You're not going to become a professional athlete if you're going to be a nice guy. Part of the success, growth, is the competition. What does Shlomo HaMelech say in Koheles is, V're'isiyas kol ha'maseh sheres nas tachan shamesh, and he says there, I don't remember the exact words, it's all about kinah. It's all about competition. And in competition, each person is trying to defeat the other. That creates an energy that can bring you to a level that otherwise you can never ever come close. Look at the Yetzirah, just taking a personal level. If a person didn't have a Yetzirah, so would he really become, would he really succeed becoming an outstanding Talmud Chacham? It's because there's someone trying to get you not to do it. That's why I want to show them up. I want to show I'm right. That propels you to a new stratosphere. I once spoke to someone who's now at Rosh Shiva, and he told me, what's the difference now and then? He says, when he was in yeshiva, almost every single person in his class had a fight with his parents to be in yeshiva. And those that didn't go to college and wanted to go to kollel, so devote themselves, they had to fight a battle of epic proportions in order, every single parent, you're going to work, you're going to college, you're not going to be a schnorrer, you're not going to starve, you're going. And the boys who wanted, were serious boys in learning, what made them so serious? Because they made a decision against enormous opposition, and they had to prove that their decision was the correct decision, that it was meaningful, it was valuable. He said to me, today, everyone here in the yeshiva, their father learned in Koilo, and their grandfather learned in Koilo. There is no nisoyon. They're not tested. They're not coming here to make a decision to show up anyone. And if they're not making a decision to show up anyone, so what happens? They're not masmidim. It's you know, they don't come to stay there. They sit with coffee, they just drink coffee the whole day, and they schmooze, and they waste their time, they don't accomplish, because they have not made a conscious decision to compete. So when it says over here, Hashem Lecheni B'Tzidkasecha, Leman Sholeroi, if you take the approach that Shara means my enemies, on the one hand, it sounds very immature. The reason why I want to succeed and be successful is to show up my enemies. Leman Sholeroi. I want to show them up. It sounds immature.
Leman. Why do you say Leman? It's a big love. Not Leman. Leman for their sake. It's a positive thing.
I don't know. I don't know. But everyone here is saying Leman to mean in order to show them up. I have someone that cannot wait for me to fail. It's only because there's someone that wants me to fail. That is what gives me the energy to succeed and show them up. It sounds immature. It sounds unrefined. It sounds like it's not a Torah concept, but to a certain degree, it's a very important and necessary, healthy ingredient in life to have an incentive and to have something to push you, even shaloi l'shma, mitoich shaloi l'shma bo l'shma. I have enemies. They want me to fall. If I didn't have enemies, I would just cruise along, oh, Shalom Aleichem, I'm not seeing you in such a long time. How are you? Welcome. Good to see you. We'll finish now. Mr. Norman Forrest is here, the famous NF.
He came from the Kutzlar.
The famous NF from Canada. We're from Canada. Which part of Canada? Montreal? Montreal, Canada. Baruch, I've not seen you in almost 2 years. Almost 2 years in person, but you're online literally every single day, morning and evening. Mr. Norman Forst, F-O-R-S-T, from Montreal, Canada. Shalom Aleichem, Baruchim Haboim. Okay, so it seems like it's an immature concept, but the truth is this is an energy which competition is something that's extremely valuable. Look, this is all you know, we're not going to talk about it today, but last year, we spoke about this at length, which is also very relevant to Thanksgiving. Last year, we gave a shiur about Rush Limbaugh, and we spoke about his take on Thanksgiving. And his take on Thanksgiving was the celebration in Plymouth, Massachusetts, with the pilgrims and the Indians, the Hulu. It was all about celebrating capitalism. Competition, really. He gets an incredible insight, and it's absolutely true. It was all about the concept of competition, of capitalism. You earn what you keep. When there's socialism, communism, then everyone is stagnant. The economy is stagnant because there's no competition. When you compete, who can earn more money, who can create a better product, and you get to keep what you earn, competition, free marketplace, creates an energy that can propel you to new levels that are beyond your comprehension. And that has been proven over and over again, the success of capitalism versus socialism. And the entire Thanksgiving in the understanding over here, when I, in Rush Limbaugh, That's exactly what it's all about, and 99% of the population doesn't understand this. They miss the whole point of what the roots, the Sharoshim, of first of all, what is America relative to all the other countries of the world? It's the only real true free marketplace. It's the only true democracy, America. America. Where do you have a capitalist society to the degree that you have in America? Not in Eretz Yisrael, for sure not. Eretz Yisrael, you can't call a democracy. No, anyone who is familiar with
it's not better than it used to be.
I hope so. 60. Oh. I hope so, but it's far. Even talking about tzedek, I'm talking about a free marketplace, talking about a true capitalist society. My father was very into this. My father's a friend of Racha. This was a very big thing to show. My father firmly believed that the Torah's view of the model economy in the Torah is a capitalist economy, not a socialist economy. There are many rise to this, interesting. The people, the founding fathers, they were all devout Christians, and they were very much influenced by the Bible. And the Bible, you appreciate the economics of the Bible. It's overflowing with capitalism, not with socialism. This is not sure in economics, but you have to appreciate there's a principle in the Torah called this is a cornerstone of the Torah. Ki lo yechdal evyon mikerev haaretz. Socialism, communism, all of the whole Hamilim Olav are all trying to do one thing. The truth is, they're all trying to grip power. Okay, yeah. That's the real truth. Yeah. But on paper, what are they trying to make believe that they're trying to put an end to Evyon the Kerev Haaretz. The Torah is the blueprint of this world, and the Torah says, don't waste your time. Ki lo yechdal Evyon the Kerev Haaretz. There will always be poor people in this world, whether you like it or not. That's the way Hashem made this world. Why is it like that? We do not know. It's part of Tzadik Viralon. But everyone else shouldn't have to suffer because of the Evyon. Just because there's an Evyon, the Kerev Haaretz, doesn't mean that every single person in this world should also be an Evyon. They're Evyonim. You're never going to be able to solve that problem. That's part of Tzadik Viralo. But everyone else should also be an Evyon. Communism is, in essence, everyone is an Evyon. Except for the few people who abuse you, who are wicked people who abuse power and then push you around. Capitalism, the vast majority are not Evyonim. Because the vast majority of people have an opportunity to make something out of themselves and to do something for themselves. They are Evyonim. Ki lo yechdal Evyon. And the Torah says, you should be good to these people. You should give them tzedakah, leket shechapeya, tzedakah. You have the ger, yosam, the almana. Society has to set up programs to help people who actually cannot help themselves. The problem with that is it turns into entitlements, and people begin to abuse the benefits, and nothing is perfect. Okay, but this idea here is competition. It's a powerful principle that goes through everything in life. Competition is wonderful. It is healthy. There are certain yeshivas now, they no longer have a valedictorian. There's no such thing as a valedictorian. There's no such thing as a salutatorian, because all of our students are wonderful. How can you have a graduation where you're going to highlight one student and other students are not going to get an award? How could you do that? This is America. In America, everyone is special. It's no good. All the teachers, the people who are in education, will tell you that it's a big disaster. What has become in almost many, many schools today, there's no longer valedictorian. So that means there's no competition. There's no striving. No one in the back of a student's mind, a good student in the back of their mind, for 4 years, students know, oh, there's a valedictorian.
There's no rewards for merit.
Exactly. There's no merit. Today, merit. No SATs anymore. No merit. There's no merit. Then there's no competition. When there's no competition, there's Chorban. And in the same way that principle is true when it comes to the economy, it's true also when it comes over here to Ruchnius competition. Chazal say, Kina Seifrin, Tarbe Chochma. So when it comes also to righteousness, That's what David says. Hashem necheni b'tzidkasecha. David is only inspired to be mevakesh, to be successful in tzedek, only leman shoriroi. I'm competing. I want to show them up. Wanting to show up my enemies is something that is very healthy. It's not an immature approach to life. Yeah, that's like America. You know, you slide down that mahalach. Yeah, you know, discrimination, not fair. It's a dangerous game. According to the vast majority of the Mefarshim, leman shoroi, that will to show up your enemies, that's right. You're a bunch of good for nothings. You should sit down and be successful. That's a healthy gasoline to get you to where you need to go. Yeah.
It looks like this guy is talking. David HaMelech had personal enemies.
Yes.
From birth.
That's right.
Since he was born.
So do we all.
Those
only David HaMelech? Don't we all?
Since he was born. And if you look, Sefer Shmuel, it's unbelievable. David, he killed Goliath. He saved the nation. And what happened after that? Well, Sinah. He was on a run.
Yerusha.
It's not a competition. It's hatred.
Yeah.
It's hatred. And he's talking about hatred.
But that hate.
Those people will not come around. Definitely not.
But he's saying Hashem.
His family came around.
Okay.
His family came around. All his brothers came around, and they stayed with him.
Okay, we're going to stop here. I think a short break, then we'll talk about turkey. I want to talk about, is it permitted? Are you allowed to eat turkey? Is it kosher?
I say only if you go to the parade today.